Ladies and gentlemen, this is the NBC Newsroom in New York. And ready now are the roundup of world capitals where NBC reporters are standing by with the latest news. Now, our first report today comes from London, England.
This is London. John McBain speaking. According to information reaching London from Singapore, the Japanese have started new drives in the Perak area of Malaya. More enemy forces have landed further south in the peninsula. Singapore was raided during the night, but it's officially stated that there was no damage and no casualties. British fighters were up to meet an attempted air raid on the city in daylight today. In Libya, there's been no change in the forward fighting area. The bulk of the enemy is still in the Jadabia region, and enemy columns are being harassed by British artillery. A considerable part of the Axis defenses around Bardia have been cleared, and the Allies are still working on this area. In London, there's no information or confirmation of reports that General Wavell has been made commander-in-chief in the Far East. But a report reaching London from Chongqing says that a large number of Chinese troops are in Burma under the command of Wavell. An Australian broadcast today said four Japanese transports have been sunk off the Thailand coast. The campaign in the Philippines is holding the center of attention in Britain today. The general feeling here seems to be that in the Philippines, as in Malaya, the Allies can fight delaying actions, but nobody sees clearly just where and when a stand can be made. The London Evening Standard today urges the Allies to remember that we are fighting for our lives. The so-called rules of war have been outmoded, according to the Standard, and only self-interest prevents Hitler from unleashing gas warfare and shooting hostages in occupied Europe on a far vaster scale. The Standard says that the term open town now has become a tactless joke in a tragic world. It's a complete figment of the imagination, the paper declares. Paris was called an open town. It is today the gloomiest and most desecrated city in Christendom. The two recent commando raids have, in the opinion of air experts here, showed Germany's lack of planes. It's pointed out that in the Lofoten raid, British warships and troops were operating beyond the range of fighter protection, yet German fighters and bombers hardly interfered with them. British observers say that Hitler hasn't enough bombers and far from enough fighters to guard the tremendous stretch of coastline from the Arctic Ocean to Spain. It seems probable that although Germany can concentrate strong air forces at various points in occupied Europe, she still hasn't enough planes to make invulnerable the whole of Europe. Free French circles are calling Marshal Pétain's speech yesterday the speech of a dispirited man who sees everything going away from him. Among British observers, there's some speculation about Pétain's implication that he expects the occupied part of France to be liberated within a foreseeable period of time. The London Times says that some of Pétain's military colleagues in the Vichy government are beginning to doubt whether a German victory is probable. This fact and the reaction of public opinion are thought to be keeping Darlan from handing over the African bases to Germany. The Times also indicates that German leaders are pressing Vichy to send a naval expedition to Saint-Pierre and Miquelon, using this as an excuse for action by the Vichy fleet against the Allied navies. The Liberal News Chronicle believes the United States will find some means of recognizing the Free French. The Aeroplane, the authoritative British aircraft review, sums up Vichy's position by saying that Vichy is favoring the Germans on the theory that if the Germans win, all will be well. The paper believes that Vichy is working on the theory that if the Allies win, French liberties will be restored anyway. The Aeroplane warns that in North Africa, Vichy may follow the same lines in Syria, allowing the Germans air bases and fighting the Allied forces that attack those air bases. If we play our cards right, the article adds, General Auchinleck's victory in Tripolitania may win over French North Africa to General de Gaulle. Such a revolt would be as important to the future of the war as the clearing of the Italians out of Africa. The theory that General von Brauchitz may have lost command of the German army because he no longer believed in a German victory is backed by information reaching Dr. Beneš, president of Czechoslovakia. According to what is described as a reliable source, von Brauchitz made some surprising statements in a conversation with a friend at the end of November. He's reported as saying that up to November 15th, 1,075,000 German soldiers had been killed on the Russian front. He said Germany couldn't win the war, either on the field of battle or in the political arena, but that she might not lose the peace if she were helped by Allied diplomatic and political mistakes. If 1 million Germans have been killed, it's reasonable to assume another 2 or 3 million wounded. It's thought that if Hitler may have heard of his commander-in-chief's doubts of a German victory and decided to relieve him of his command. This is John McVane in London, returning you to the National Broadcasting Company in New York.
From the NBC newsroom in New York, a dispatch from Rome. British mechanized forces have penetrated into Tripolitania, and the Italian high command admits that this morning, asserting that violent fighting is underway at El Melaha. Now, the Italians say there have been casualties among the civilian population, but makes no reference to military casualties. Next, we'll get a report from the Pacific Ocean battlefront, and for this report, we take you now to San Francisco.
From the NBC newsroom in San Francisco, we bring you the latest reports on the theater of war in the Pacific. American and Filipino troops fighting in the jungles along a 200-mile defense arc are reported making a grim last-ditch stand about Manila. With all communications with Manila blanked out for the third day except for official messages, the War Department gave this terse summary of the situation at 7 a.m. Manila time. All available forces have now been united. In addition to the land positions, the harbor defenses and island fortifications are strongly held by our troops. In Washington, military observers said that General Douglas MacArthur's daring tactical maneuver of consolidating his forces might make it possible to resist for weeks, if not months. The bold stroke executed during a major battle left General MacArthur's lines extending roughly from a point somewhere immediately south of Manila northward 50 to 75 miles through Bulacan province and thence westward to the coast. In Singapore, meanwhile, General Pau Nau, new commander-in-chief of British forces in the Far East, has declared considerable help is on the way to Malaya. His statement did not disclose the nature of the help, but said it is intended to fight for every inch of ground down the Malay Peninsula. Chungking. Japanese occupation of the northern suburbs of Changsha, Hunan Province capital and silk center, has been acknowledged by the Chinese as fighting in a shifting, no-quarter battle for possession of the city raged without a pause. A Chinese communique said the battle in northern Hunan province was in its final stages and Chinese soldiers were fiercely resisting attacks on the outer defenses of Changsha. Batavia. The Dutch East Indies High Command has announced that three Japanese planes bombed the east coast of Sumatra yesterday. A delayed dispatch from Rangoon. Casualties in the first mass Japanese air raid on Rangoon are now known to have totaled 1,000 persons. Losses in a second attack were officially described as negligible. British reports from New Delhi said 10 raiding bombers and 10 fighters were known to have been destroyed, and others were probably fatally damaged by the defense guns and flyers. One American volunteer, whose identity was kept secret, was credited with shooting down 4 planes. Incidentally, according to a Reuters report, a military spokesman at Chungking, China, has said that fully equipped Chinese troops already had entered Burma. Burma borders on both French Indochina and Thailand, from which the Japanese are operating in their drive against Malaya. A report from Sydney. Darwin, the major port on the north coast of Australia, experienced a 2-hour alert early today, but no Japanese planes appeared. It was the city's second air raid alarm of the war. A dispatch from Melbourne reveals that Royal Australian Air Force flyers started fires and damaged enemy personnel and buildings in a small-scale attack on Kampingama Rangi in the Japanese-controlled Caroline Islands. Ground installations and seaplanes were major targets, the communique said. All the raiders were reported to have returned safely. The raid was the second offensive action reported undertaken against Japanese territory since the outbreak of the war. In the first, Australian bombers based on Netherlands Indies territory were said to have attacked a small Japanese island air base between the Celebes and the Palau Islands about 2 weeks ago. Kapingamarangi Island, just north of the equator, is the southernmost of the Japanese-mandated Caroline group. Northeast of New Guinea, it is within 300 miles of Australian-mandated territory in the Solomon Island group and Bismarck Archipelago. In Singapore, a British headquarters communique has this to say. British forces on the western Malayan front are engaging Japanese parties freshly landed in the lower Perak region, as well as on the main front to the northeast below Ipoh. In the Kuantan region on the east coast of Malaya, where the Japanese have claimed the capture of the port of Kuantan, the communique said, our patrols have been active and our artillery engaged enemy targets. From the NBC newsroom in San Francisco, we return you now to New York.
Now to our nation's capital for the latest news on the Allied war effort. Here now is your reporter, Earl Godwin, speaking from the NBC newsroom in Washington.
And good morning, folks. This country, which has more cars than all the rest of the world combined, suddenly stops and turns the car production into a blow against the pagan axis. That's the biggest thing in the Allied effort that New York just mentioned that has yet occurred. 130 million people who own enough cars for everybody in the country, all the folks, mama, papa, and the kids, to take a ride all at once in all the cars on roads good enough and wide enough to hold them all, four cars abreast. Transfer and translate that tremendous peacetime power into war effort, and you'll have a greater thunderbolt than ever Jove forged on any Mount Olympus. This government, through its rather awkwardly named OPM, is thus turning the automotive industry into one vast arsenal. Of course, the automotive industry was way ahead of the thing, and they've already translated and transferred some of their business into wartime effort anyhow, producing the munitions to win the war or turn the tide of war against the Axis in 1943 at the latest. And until that time, unless something else happens, you folks listening to me stand slim chances of a new car and hardly any new tires, unless you're in the essential class, such as a doctor or a policeman. The American legs are going to be called into play again, and the American figure for Miss America and Mrs. America will have to take form now from exercise rather than through those rubber and elastic so-called foundation garments, is it? The rubber in your girdle, girls, will be used to snap at the Nazi psychopathic case. Wouldn't you give up a girdle or two if you knew the rubber would be used to snap the Jap off the map? The facts in the car and truck crackdown are simple, and here they are as I understand them. No more car sales at all. No deliveries until January 15 or thereabouts, when a car and truck rationing order will be put into effect. Automobile manufacturers are to meet here between now and the 15th and go into this thing and try to plan something methodical. This does not affect sales to the government, sales to the war, or lease lend requirements, of course. There are now about 500,000, 450,000, let us say, new cars in the dealer's hands, and trucks, well, we have no information. But those 450,000 new cars are not going to be delivered even if you bought one. The government considers a new car any car with less than 1,000 miles on the speedometer. More than that, it's a second-hand jalopy and escapes the crackdown. The new motor car stoppages mean burden on other transportation, of course, and gradually. So OPM, that's the Office of Production Management, and they're running the war as far as industry and goods are concerned. OPM okays priorities to railroads and all that to carry out the program of repairs to and additions to railroad facilities, new cars, new engines, and so forth. The first session of the 77th Congress ends today, and the second session, which would start tomorrow by law, goes over to Monday to give the boys on the Hill a breather. The first order of big business in the second session will be to hear the President's report on the state of the nation. That will happen on Tuesday, possibly. Also to take the $50 billion budget from the President's hands and turn it into a set of appropriations for spending and tax bills for receiving. Behind the scenes, there rages the battle of the economy block versus the farm block. The Special Economy Committee's cut of $1.7 billion is endorsed by the Secretary of the Treasury, Mr. Morgenthau, but the farm block will not stand for a reduction of farm payments under any war, and that's all from Washington at this time.
And there you have the latest news, ladies and gentlemen. Your reporters were John McVane in London, Earl Godwin in Washington, and news of the Pacific Theater was reported by the NBC Newsroom in San Francisco. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Good evening, everyone. This is John W. Vandercook speaking for Alka-Seltzer, bringing you the news of the world. The past day has been dominated by two outstanding facts. The city of Manila has fallen. Jap troops today are swaggering through Manila's sunlit streets. The eternally bitter and unforgiving Filipino civilians of that capital can now see face to face the brown, tough, dusty little soldiers who have won this first short round. But the other fact is just as important. The American and Philippine army has not by any means been beaten, nor has the island of Luzon yet been taken by the enemy. In North Africa, one of the most dangerous surviving pockets of Axis resistance has today been abruptly cleaned up. The coast town of Bardia, close to the Egyptian frontier, has been captured in an unexpectedly swift British smash attack. 5,000 German and Italian troops were either casualties or taken prisoner, and 1,000 Allied prisoners released. And now, before we switch overseas for our direct news reports, here is a brief message from Charles Lyon.
For the sake of your comfort this weekend and to help next week get a good start, here's something you can do right now. Check up on your supply of Alka-Seltzer tablets. Then, if irregular hours, eating, drinking, and smoking too much result in acid indigestion or upset stomach, you'll be prepared to alkalize. Alka-Seltzer's effervescent alkalizing action offers you two kinds of relief, both at the same time. First, it eases your immediate discomfort, and second, it reduces excess stomach acidity. You'll like Alka-Seltzer's pleasant, refreshing taste, for it is not at all like some bitter-tasting medicine, and it is not a laxative. So remember always, for acid indigestion, upset stomach, and heartburn, be wise. Alkalize with Alka-Seltzer. And now, the news of the world.
It is a little after 1 o'clock on Saturday morning in London, and Robert St. John is standing by. We switch to him now.
This is London. About 2 hours ago, morning papers were beginning to roll off the great presses in Fleet Street. The big headlines were about the fall of Manila, the capture of Bardia, and then a flash came over the cables from Washington, a flash that 26 nations had agreed to fight the Axis to the death, not to sign a separate peace. The presses were stopped. A special edition was put out. The big headline now says, "We're all in and all out packed." So far, we don't have many details here in London about the provisions of the agreement. But we did notice that other nations may sign up later. So we telephoned the headquarters of the Free French. The spokesman said that if things so develop that they are later recognized in Washington, the Free French undoubtedly will join up. On the way to the studio a few minutes ago, I saw a hack driver reading one of the early morning papers. I pointed to the big headline and asked him what he thought of it. He gave what will probably be the reaction of most little fellows tomorrow. It's all right, probably a good thing, but I just hope everyone will live up to it. Then he asked me if this new pact means that Russia is now at war with Japan. But from the bulletins we've had here, it's not the intention of the pact. About the fall of Manila, we've been told here that it will make no difference in the British determination to hold on to Singapore. Singapore will be held, they say. The London Times pays a handsome tribute to the men of Manila, praises them for fighting a brilliant delaying action against overwhelming odds, denounces the diabolical Japanese bombing of the open city. But the Times does not attempt to dodge the gravity of the situation in the Pacific. Australia, the paper says, must now maintain even greater vigilance than before. Now, this is Robert St. John, returning you to New York.
And now we will attempt to make contact with our News of the World reporter in the Dutch East Indies. We switch controls to San Francisco now and call in Sidney Albright in Batavia, Java.
Hello, NBC. This is Sidney Albright speaking in Batavia, Java. The time is 7:49 Saturday morning. The latest communique of the Netherlands Indies Fighting Forces reads, "The enemy is continuing his attempt to terrorize the population by bombing and machine gunning. Yesterday, three Japanese planes bombed and machine gunned Labuan Bilik on Sumatra's east coast, which is completely devoid of military objectives. Almost the same thing happened at Pomorang in the Celebes group of islands, where the enemy set fire to Copra Godowns. These attacks, on the whole, caused little damage, while so far no casualties have been reported, with the exception of Babo in New Guinea, where one adult and two children were killed. Two adults and two children were seriously wounded, and 10 persons suffered slight injuries. They were all civilians. In the northern part of the archipelago, Japanese aircraft attacked a warship. No serious damage was done. In the same location, two planes were attacked by a number of Japanese aircraft, but no damage was done, the communique concludes. Java strongman, Dr. H.J. von Moek, has been appointed Lieutenant Governor General of the Netherlands Indies. It will be recalled that von Moek was recently appointed Minister of Colonies, but postponed his departure for London because of the serious developments in the Pacific. This is the first appointment to this post for more than a century, and in the history of the Indies, there have only been three Lieutenant Governor Generals. Yesterday's communique stated that an American freighter was attacked and sunk on New Year's Eve by a Japanese bomber. Dutch naval seaplanes rescued 48 members of the crew and two who were wounded. One person is missing. So far as is known, there were no passengers aboard. No comments were obtainable from local officials on the agency report from Australia that General Wavell has been appointed Commander-in-Chief of all Allied forces in the Far East. This report was not confirmed, nor was it denied. I now return you to the National Broadcasting Company.
Now back to John W. Vandercook in New York.
Most of us in America today are trying our best to improve the bitter taste of the first defeat which the United States has received at the hands of a foreign power in almost a century. Manila, we are telling each other, was not vitally important anyway. All war strategists had known or guessed that Manila would almost surely be lost sooner or later if we ever had to fight Japan on such a distant front. The surrender of the capital does not necessarily mean the surrender of the whole Philippines, nor necessarily even the loss of Luzon Island. General MacArthur apparently has carried out a brilliant maneuver. With great skill, he has shifted most of his forces in a kind of swift sidestep. Instead of being caught, as the Japs doubtless hoped they would be caught, with their backs to Manila Bay and with the enemy dead ahead of them, Luzon's defenders have very ably ducked. Most of MacArthur's army is now northwest of Manila Bay. If, as is likely, it is forced back still farther, our forces can now withdraw into one of the most mountainous and most thickly forested sections of Luzon, among the 4,000-foot peaks and steep, twisting valleys of Bataan Province. It is a small area, it is true. Bataan is only a kind of fat peninsula, with the China Sea at one side of it and with Manila Bay at the other. But the job of blasting the valiant Americans and Filipinos out of Bataan should take the Japs a long, long time. There is certainly comfort in each of those facts. For facts they are. Each statement is exactly true. But there is not a great deal of permanent nourishment to be had from chewing sour grapes. The loss of Manila certainly is important, and all Americans know it is. We are now fighting not just a land army on the continent of Europe. We are fighting a sea power, and at this stage of things, a very competent power at that. The broad aspects of the Japanese war plan are already fairly clear. Japan, like Great Britain, which it has long strived to imitate, is an island, and a vulnerable island. But unlike Britain, the Japs for years have been establishing a bigger and bigger safety zone around their homeland. The first move was in the Japanese victory over Russia, way back in 1905. With the control of the peninsula of Korea, Japan enlarged her safety ring. In the last war, she grabbed two strings of Germans' own sea islands. And then there were just that many less places from which Japan could be easily attacked. The seizure of Manchuria from Japan was the next step. Then, in fast succession, the Japs took over Indochina, then Thailand, then Hong Kong, and now part of the Philippines, and part of Borneo, and Wake, and Guam. And with each victory, the Japs have not only enlarged their empire, but they have each time made that empire a little harder to smash up, as one day it must and will be. For the filling stations and the repair shops, the Navy and air bases for the final necessary journey against Japan's own heart and citadel, steadily in these early and indecisive days are being moved farther and farther off. Only Russia remains menacingly close to the Jap home islands. And with each victory in the tropical Pacific, the Jap's tone to Russia grows ever cockier. And now for a word from our own nation's capital. Let's hear from Earl Godwin in the newsroom in Washington.
And good evening, folks. There are only 200,000 more motor cars can be made in this country after January 31st, a blackout on private automobile manufacturing. The crackdown affects 260,000 workmen in Michigan alone. Uncounted thousands elsewhere in the motor car business and along the road. The president said today there would be only a 2 months idleness for the automobile industry, not 6 months as had been rumored, while the factories retool for all-out war production. But hold your hats. The government thinks it sees ahead the prospect of commandeering private cars. This is a futurity, but it would seem to mean that if you have a car and hide it, you don't dare ride in it. You're a marked man if the government wants your car. And a few days ago, all we were worrying about in this country was a place to park the family jalopy. But the CIO waxes critical tonight. In an open letter to OPM just out, CIO President Murray declares the motor crackdown is the result of negligence, lazy thinking, and the policy of business as usual. CIO says it submitted a plan a year ago to utilize the motor industry to its full for war purposes and not jerk everybody off his feet, but that the plan was discarded. One large automobile association today asked Congress to make tire, cars, and gadget thefts a federal crime. And the president today asked everyone in the news business here to spread the fact that there are no laws prohibiting foreign-born workmen for working on defense projects. You know, this good fellow Robert St. John in London grabs the papers off the press in London and scoops me with the big Washington story, the story of the all-in, all-out pact here, but I can tell St. John's taxi driver and you too that Russia does not sign to go to war against Japan in that pact. That will come later, perhaps. And history marks this day as the date on which 26 nations sign up to go to war for one and all and no separate peace. All the resources available to be used to the common end and not to quit in one piece or in the sulks. You know, the nation believes Colonel Lindbergh has applied for an Air Corps commission. That's been generally thought of, generally printed and published and spoken of and commented on. Hard-boiled Army officers today pointed out to me that Lindy merely wrote a letter to a personal friend, General Arnold, Air Corps chief. Only one way for Lindy to get a commission: apply through the 2nd Air Corps area or by direct application endorsed to the Secretary of War here. And the colonel so far has done neither of these things. And that's all from Washington at this time.
John W. Vandercook will return with some more late news in just a moment. When you catch cold, start at once to take care of it. And for prompt relief of your distress, take Alka-Seltzer. Start to take Alka-Seltzer according to the directions inside each package, and be careful. Get more rest than usual, stay out of drafts, dress comfortably, get your daily quota of vitamins. And for the sore throat caused by your cold, use Alka-Seltzer as a gargle, too. You'll like Alka-Seltzer, and you'll like the way it can relieve your distress. So remember it the next time you have a cold. If you have one now, start using Alka-Seltzer tonight. All druggists have it. Now, back to the newsroom.
Moscow, the Russians on the central front have advanced another 30 miles against the Germans south and ever farther west of Moscow, and say that in the past 5 days they have killed 50,000 Nazis. The often fought over and down now doubtless mispronounced railway junction town of Malo-Yaroshlavets has been retaken by the Red Army. So too has another strategic town on the upper Volga River. Between those two points, a deep German thrust toward Moscow is still Nazi-held, but Moscow points out that that may be just dandy, for the Russians are now shaping against that deep German salient exactly the same kind of encirclement movement which the Nazis themselves have so often used. And that's the news of the world. This is John W. Vandercook speaking for Alka-Seltzer, saying goodbye until Monday at this same time.
This is the Red Network of the National Broadcasting Company.